Pirates fans, welcome to Clear the Deck on Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. This is one of your fantastic hosts, Jared Prugar, with my co-host, Alex Stumpf. Alex, how are you today?
I'm getting over a bug, so I'm doing better overall.
Were you as anemic as the Pirates' offense this series?
If not the offense, the bullpen. How about that?
Ugh. It was not a pleasant series just now against the St. Louis Cardinals, losing 3 out of 4. With that said, let's go over our prognostications. Neither one of us were anywhere near happened, were we?
No, I think we would have been fine if, you know, the bullpen would have, you know, closed a couple of those games out.
But that'd be too easy.
Would be. But it isn't. Nothing's ever easy with this bullpen.
No, not this year. What do you think is the biggest issue with the bullpen right now, other than none of them can keep runners from scoring?
Well, that's a big one. I don't know if you need a second one besides that. Everyone, imagine explaining to someone on April 10th that Kyle Crick would be, you know, the most reliable arm in the bullpen. The guy who was in AAA. I mean, he's been fine. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm insulting Kyle Crick. He's been good. He's been reliable. Richard Rodriguez, yeah, he gave up the walk-off homer Saturday night, but as a whole, he's been fine. He hasn't had a whole lot of high-leverage situations, so whenever you do see him give up a home run or walk-off like he did in Philadelphia, you know, that's kind of disheartening of, well, you know, they could really use a better relief pitcher right now, or someone who could throw some high leverage innings, because Vasquez is not doing it. I was ready to write a eulogy for his UCL Sunday night whenever we recorded in that lovely parking lot last week. And of course, that means, you know, he pitches 3 days in a row, and the third day he doesn't even get an out. It just bad bullpen all around. Pirates lose 3 out of 4 in this series to St. Louis. With some good bullpen work, they could have won 3 out of 4.
You have a guy like Vasquez, the artist, the closer formerly known as Rivero, who I do believe had better statistics before the name change, but that's neither here nor there. My big thing for him is the fact that these guys, or Clint Hurdle and this coaching staff, are very, very reliant on Vasquez. He's throwing 3 out of 4 days, 4 out of 5 days, and he's coming off a forearm issue. Now, whether that healed up overnight or not, that's still something you have to be very, very careful with. And
yeah,
obviously,
I don't
he's
get
not
the third
right.
Day. I don't get the third day in a row with that. Especially since it was a 3-run save. I mean, if the Pirates had a 9-5 game, there's absolutely no way that he is in that game, in that situation. But, oh, you know, 3-0. Or it's only 3 runs. You got to bring in your closer. This is high leverage.
Right. I think they have to ease up off of him and give him a chance to have a moderate amount of success. I don't think it's fair to him by throwing him out there every day when he's got things he's got to work through, and you really can't do that without a little bit of rest and recuperation.
I agree. And once again, it was good to see him hit 100 finally.
Yes.
Against the Cubbies, whenever he came out, got 3 ground ball outs. That looked like the Vasquez that, you know, the Pirates have been looking for this entire year. But, you know, this last outing against St. Louis, average fastball velocity just over 97. I don't know if he was just running with a little extra adrenaline that one day or what's going on. His arm slot, Kevin Cray of the Point of Pittsburgh wrote about this last week. He's lower. Significantly lower than it was last year. And usually whenever a pitcher lowers their arm slot, that's a sign that something's not right. I don't think you really need a whole lot of analytics to say that something's not right with Vasquez. Especially mechanically, physically, he isn't throwing 100. He had that one outing where he did throw 100. And if he can't throw 100, his changeup isn't nearly as effective because, really, it's just a 90-mile-per-hour fastball, which usually hangs over the heart of the plate, which sounds bad, but whenever you're expected to pitch 10 miles per hour faster, you either swing through it or you're so far ahead that you give a really bad swing and bad contact, which is what makes the pitch so effective. It's not because it's, you know, this mind-boggling moving pitch. It's just the change in velocity. If he doesn't have that separation in velocity, that pitch is almost worthless.
You're right, and that makes a lot of sense. And I don't think Vasquez has been right for most of the year. And maybe that is more forearm stuff. Maybe that's an issue that developed in spring training or early in the season. And it's something that, A, he's had to work through. And because of that injury, he's had to change his mechanics, and now we're seeing it. So you have a guy that has a very good deal. He finally gets a deal as a talking contract, and now he wants to live up to those expectations. And it's very possible that that's playing a role here in the demise of his arsenal of pitches.
Yeah. And we've seen this all year. Opening day was kind of an eye-opener, but he settled down in April. I guess people just kind of got used to it, even though, you know, he was leaving a lot of base runners on during that month. Still, I guess overall, if you're looking for some, you know, hope of faith, his FIP is 299, while his ERA is 484, so FIP is usually a good indicator of what's to come. But that would still almost be dull. If he got his ERA just a little north of his FIP, which would take a while. It's going to take him a while because, you know, relievers, you know, run stack up fast.
Right.
If he does that and he ends the year with an ERA a little over 3, well, that's still double what he had last year. And he'll finish with, you know, half the WAR that he did last year. He's not what he was last year. And I brought this up casually to a couple people. But this offseason, the Pirates traded Cole and they traded McCutchen very close to one another. And then they signed Rivero. And obviously there was some talk of extension going on for a while. It wasn't because of the trades that they went to Felipe and they said that they need an extension, they need a face. But it was obviously a move that, okay, we need to buy a little PR right now based on just the release.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it, you have to wonder if you were trading your ace and you're trading your best position player, why wouldn't you trade your best relief pitcher too? Like, don't half-ass the rebuild. If it was, now obviously this team didn't look like it was rebuilding 3 weeks ago, but now that they're in big boy time and not doing very well, and now just a game over 500, the worst they've been since opening day, you have to wonder, did they do everything right with Felipe? And I don't think they did.
It's possible. I know regression is a situation that we talk about very often when you're comparing seasons. For him to come out and replicate what he did last year, well, I think would have been damn near impossible. Now, to regress as much as he's had, I don't think anybody expected that level of regression. With that said, we still got a long way to go for the season. He's been used a lot more this year, I think, in two inning saves, trying to get 4, 5, 6 outs.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. I think that's more indicative of the fact that they don't have a lot of faith in a lot of arms in that bullpen. I think the two most consistent arms have been Kyle Crick and Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah, I can't argue with Glasnow. Glasnow's been another guy who, ERA, maybe not that flattering, but a good FIP. He's pitching in new roles. I talked to him this last week whenever he got that. You know, he came in for one out, got his out. I believe that was on Kingham's start.
I think so.
Whenever he went 5 2/3. Yeah. He's like, how long did it take you to get warm? He's like, oh, only about 10 pitches. So he's sounding like a real relief pitcher at this point, which you can argue is either good or bad. But, hey, it doesn't sound like, you know, a starting pitcher who's out of water who needs, you know, a whole inning to get warm nowadays. He's sounding like someone who could actually be used in high leverage spots.
And they have been doing a good job of using him in certain situations when that time arises.
Yeah. But for the meantime, for Felipe, I mean, there's only one situation harder than that blown save that he had where he came in with the bases loaded in the eighth inning with one out, and it's a one-run game. I mean, the only other worst situation you can have is nobody out, bases loaded, one-run game in the eighth inning.
It's better than bases loaded, no outs in the first inning.
Yeah, I guess technically. But for something that you could realistically see him pitching, which, again, batter right before him, Michael Feliz, who's also been struggling, has been on the hook for an earned run in five straight outings, which is a shame because he really looked like he'd put a lot together.
And he didn't get through his inning of work on Sunday either.
No, he didn't. Gave up. I mean, the run he gave up was a ground ball that deflected off him, and
right. But the double
it was a tough luck run. But yeah, he didn't pitch well.
Right, and
he
the
did
double
not pitch
that he
well.
Gave up one hop the wall, and it was a pretty close play at second base, thanks to the arm of Austin Meadows, who played left field on Sunday against the Cardinals. But
he had 20 something pitches, so. Maybe it's just get Vasquez some clean innings, but then again, you gave up five runs with nobody out in a clean ninth inning on Thursday night, so.
In years past, the Pirates, let's go back to when Melanson was there. Melanson was always, or had Watson in the eighth. Watson had Rivero in the eighth. Rivero has question mark. And then whenever Melanson was either on the DL or traded, Watson stepped in. Whenever Watson was on the DL or subsequently traded, Rivero stepped in, and they all filled in admirably. Now you don't have that viable option behind Rivero or Vasquez. So,
no.
And that's, I mean, what I think they need to find.
I think the best way to sum up George Contos this season is he got released. And he signs a minor league contract with the Indians. Oh my goodness, if you're not a good enough relief pitcher to get a major league contract with the Indians.
Yeah, that was as somebody that's seen that
I could probably get a major league contract with the Indians.
As somebody that's seen that bullpen, the dumpster fire itself in person, that's mind-boggling to me. But, hey, it's baseball, and Contos is a professional reliever, and here we are, professional podcasters. But it's just one of those deals. You hope that Vasquez, the closer formerly known as Rivero, comes back and works through his injuries and finds that comfort level that he had last year. But you also hope that the bullpen really starts to kind of figure itself out, because if they continue to struggle, it doesn't matter whether it's Nick Kingham pitching, Joe Musgrove pitching, Austin Meadows in center field, Austin Meadows in left field or right field, or him playing every single position. It doesn't matter. Their Pirates aren't going to win very many games unless their pitchers can go all nine innings. But for that to happen, I think they all have to throw Maddox's, which is throwing complete game under 100 pitches. Because you know how Clint Hurdle and the coaching staff, they don't like to have pitchers go over 100 pitches.
So Sunday's game, one hitter, not very pretty. The one coming from Colin Moran.
They got two hits.
No, they got two hits. That's right. They got another one out. But no, Colin Moran broke up the no-hitter.
Right.
On a 0-2 pitch. Pinch hit. He didn't start, even though it was righty this time. Obviously, the strategy seems to have been that the Pirates wanted to get him 2 days off in a row. And Dodgers are coming to town Tuesday. Clayton Kershaw, it would have been his spot in the rotation. You have to imagine that if he wasn't on the DL, that Moran would have been starting Sunday and gotten Tuesdays off because he can't face lefties. But why can't he face lefties? I mean, okay, the results haven't been great, but he doesn't look completely lost, and he doesn't have that big a sample size. If you really want him to be a third baseman or a corner infielder of the future, you can't just have him platoon all the time. Let the kid try his hand against a lefty.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair for him to you. This is a guy you traded your ace, and I put that the air quotes on that. You traded your ace for a package that included Moran, Feliz, Jason Martin, and Joe Musgrove. This is a guy that should be the anchor at third base, the anchor that you need, because you never knew what or when or how Jungho Kang was going to come back, or if that was even going to be the case. Fun fact, he hit a grand slam on Saturday for Bradenton, but that's not what we're talking about here. For a guy like Moran, this is his first full year. I get it. My biggest objection to the Clint Hurdle era is his reliance on platoons. I'm an old school baseball guy in the fact that I think you get better by playing every day, whether you can hit lefties or righties. That's neither here nor there. You got to go up and hit. I think they have to give him more of a shot to play every day. I love David Freese. I think he's a great bench bat and a good glove off the bench, but I don't think he's any more than that right now. Obviously, today, I think you see that Sean Rodriguez isn't quite where he was in years past, and yet Clint Hurdle still decides to trot him out there every second or third game, giving somebody a night off. And I get that there's been some illnesses going around the clubhouse between Cervelli having a flu, Josh Harrison having flu-like symptoms. It's just one of those deals. But you have to let Moran, who's played admirably well for the Pirates, play every day at third base.
Since May 26th, which, okay, I'm going to pick that date. It seems a little bit like cherry-picking. But that's a little over a week. He's had 6 at-bats against lefties. He's 3-for-6 in over a little over a week. It was like an 8-day stretch right there. That's not bad. 3-for-6. And before that, that's a 103.8 mile per hour exit velocity lineout, another lineout, a couple hard hit foul balls, another flyout, a walk, hard hit ground out, 100 miles per hour on that exit velocity, just going through the baseball savant. There's a lot of good things that you would like to see. Yeah, he has some strikeouts in there. He's obviously going to hit righties better than lefties, but it's not like he's completely lost against them. And Freeze last year was the platoon bat who just didn't have someone to handle righties for him. But this year, he's not hitting lefties well. So if Moran's your guy of the future, I can't see why every single time there's a lefty on the mound, David Freeze has to start. Or better yet, why can't David Freeze ever start at first base? Because Josh Bell looks pretty lost against them, too.
I'm pretty sure against us too. Josh Bell's played every game this season.
Has he?
He's played in 59 games.
All right.
And the Pirates are
30-29.
So he's played in every game. Why is that? And we're still talking about Colin Moran. And I think Colin Moran deserves more opportunities against lefties. He's hitting 250s, got a 333 on base slugging percentage. Give him more opportunities, and I think he could flourish. Because you're not going to platoon him for the rest of his career in Pittsburgh. I don't think that's
well, if he really does stink, you can platoon him. You're getting right. Jungho Kang back, potentially.
Right.
Jose Azuna. He's a guy who really is just a platoon bat who's trying to learn third base. There are some options, right. But you don't have to doom the kid to this role.
Right. I want to see what he's able to do. It's June 4th. Let's take the leash off, and let's make it one of those retractable leashes you get your dog. And then if he starts to struggle against lefties, you hit the stop button and yank him back. And you put a freeze in, or you get an Osuna, or even maybe by this point, Jungho Kang's locked in and ready to go. And then you see what they can do. Or you use Kang as a middle infielder or a utility guy that can play second base, shortstop, or third base. Whereas Freeze is only a corner guy. Sean Rodriguez, you use him as a utility guy in the outfield, which is okay, whatever. But now you've got a four outfield system where he's not fitting in there because he's not better than Polanco, Marte, Dickerson, or Meadows. And he's not cracking it there. So your options for Rodriguez are shortstop and second base. And then you've got an Adam Frazier who's shortstop, second base, and outfield. He's not cracking the outfield. And then your starter is Josh Harrison, who used to be that super utility guy. But you've got to give Moran the opportunity to play every day. And I think on the reverse end, you can see what you're able to do because he's having that success. On the reverse end, we're looking at a Josh Bell who's played in 59 games, and it's like, well, maybe he shouldn't be playing every day. Maybe he should be getting some spells.
Yeah, he's had a few games that he didn't start and he just pinch hit. But yeah, he might be the type of guy who really does just need to sit down for a little bit. I think that's, we talked about this last time, that he just doesn't repeat his mechanics. That's his big problem.
He's hitting, in his last 15 games, he's hitting 167. With one home run and five RBIs.
Or if you want to put it as really simply as possible, Meadows has more home runs than Josh Bell this year.
And he's only been up for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, there's really no way to slice Josh Bell's season where it's like, oh yeah, he's doing great. He had that good stretch in a little bit where he finally elevated the ball a little bit, but now he's back to just putting it on the ground all the time. There is a lot of problems with his swing right now. Maybe unplugging him is the answer. I don't know, but honestly, for a guy who was worth less than one WAR in his first season, first full season as a big leaguer, I'm going to throw out a name that I don't think a lot of people are going to like. Mikel Franco of the Phillies, another guy who had, you know, big frame, had some power, promise, had a pretty good rookie year, you know, if you just look at the stat line, but overall was pretty underwhelming and just hasn't put it together since. And I'm seeing a lot of that in Bell right now.
We talked about it, and we've texted back and forth about certain things related to Josh Bell, especially his hands, because his hands are all over the place. You look at a guy like Gregory Polanco, who's started to come around the last few games. He's hitting the ball well. He's finding gaps. He's hitting the ball hard again. He adjusted his hands ever so slightly, and that's where you get a lot of your issues whenever guys are slumping. You're dropping your hands. For Bell, he hits a lot of ground balls. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
So he's obviously getting on top of the baseball, whereas you want now in this launch angle evolution, you want to get backspin on the ball. You want to find gaps. If you hit the ball on the ground, somebody's probably going to get it. Unless it's a one hopper to the outfield, it's just one of those things. But you look at it at the plate. He's had, 48 at-bats against left-handed pitchers. He's a switch hitter, so that means he's hitting from the right side. He's had 13 hits, 3 doubles and 2 triples. So he's hitting 271 against lefties this year. He's got 11 strikeouts. That said, obviously bigger sample size, 166 at-bats versus righties. He's got 39 hits, 8 doubles, 1 triple, and 4 homers. He's got 35 strikeouts against right-handed pitchers. He's 235 against righties this year. That's not good enough to be an everyday first baseman, in my opinion.
No. Not right now.
He's a sophomore. This is his second full year in the major leagues. I get that. But this is a team. We talked about taking the leash off of Moran. Play him at third base in platoon, Bell with Freeze. Then you're okay, I think. I think that, think about it. You have Freeze hitting against righties or however you want to split this platoon up. Or no, he would be. That means Bell. Sorry, I'm being a little dyslexic here. With lefties, he'd be hitting from the right side. Against righties, he's hitting from the left. So you give me Freeze. Let's see what he can do. Boom, Moran, third base, Freeze, Bell, platoon. Let's make it happen because it's not working.
It really isn't. You know what? We could keep going on about how things aren't working with this team this week or this past season. Why don't we go ahead and talk about what's not working for this future week? Putting some words in. At least I'm putting words in my mouth. I don't want to put them in yours.
we're talking. So back to Bell. I don't want to leave this just yet because I found this interesting little tidbit. He's had 55 appearances in the four hole. He's appeared in 55 games where he's been batting fourth in the lineup. That's your cleanup hitter. That's your RBI guy. And this is a guy that's hitting 243 or 248. I'm sorry. I think that's case confirmed. Maybe move him out of the four spot. But yeah. As you're saying,
let's
go on about that.
Well, you gave me a little bit of time. I was trying to whip something up on Baseball Savant, and I was moving on. But since you gave me that little bit of time to finish it up, you brought up launch angle. Josh Bell has 169 batted balls this year.
Nice.
Okay. Launch angle is a bell curve where if you hit it too low, it's garbage. If you hit it too high, it's pop up. It's a pop up and it's garbage. So basically, independent research, I found 11 to 30 is the best launch to have it. League wide, batters get it about 27% of the time. Out of those 169 batted balls for Josh Bell, 37 have been in that perfect, 11 to 30 range. That's head math. Head math, around 20%. That's below average.
Well below average, I think.
Well below average. All right. So I have my last Josh Bell tidbit right there.
Let's talk about Josh
Bell. Something I just whipped up right there on the spot.
Obviously, okay, so he's appeared in 59 games. 55 of those have been in a cleanup hitter, as a cleanup hitter. That's supposed to be your most productive spot in the lineup if you're going by basic lineup construction. Is that correct?
I believe in two, but.
But.
Number two guy.
Number two.
Your number four needs to be doing a lot better than it is right now.
Your four guy is supposed to be getting, driving guys in. He's supposed to be doing that. And Bell, I guess for the most part, it's been one of those situations. He's got 32 RBIs. Let's go a little bit further back and let's see runs batted in. Okay, he's right up there. He's driving in runs. But he's not getting on base as a result. So it's kind of
I'm going to Google
anomaly.
So you riff for a little bit because RBI is a team stat.
Right. So and the team leader for the Pirates right now is Francisco Cervelli, who had spent quite a bit of time in that number two spot when he was hot. But it's just one of those things. Then you have Corey Dickerson, 32, and then Moran, 25. You have, and it just gets further and further down the list. I mean, then you got numbers. The last one on the team is Chad Kuhl. So, and your guy Moroff's 14th on the team with 6 RBIs. So, RBIs are situational. Obviously, that means you're getting up with guys on base. With the guys that have hit in front of Bell most of the year, Polanco when he was hot, Meadows now that he's real hot, and you've got Harrison and Frazier and Marte. You want those guys to score. You want to get those guys in, and you want to put those runs up on the board. So the thing is, you also want Josh Bell to get on base, and he's not doing a very good job of that.
No, he's not. So, doing a quick Google search right now on Fangraphs, because you do Google searches on Fangraphs. How about that? This year in baseball, there have been 13,724 at-bats league-wide with a runner in scoring position. Just whipping up the calculator. And there have been 5,011 RBI. So let's just – not a perfect stat, I know. But roughly, for every at-bat someone has with a runner in scoring position, it results in 0.365 RBI.
Okay.
Josh Bell this year has 74 plate appearances, 64 at-bats, and 24 RBI. Not knowing the results, so I could look pretty foolish right there. Yeah, he's at 0.375 for his RBI to at-bat ratio. So it's not like he is a good RBI machine. Right. He just being presented a ton of opportunities, and then he does league average. That's not an RBI guy. That's right. Why I hate distinctions like that just because the guy has a lot of runs batted in.
Right, and I would venture to guess that Cervelli's, a lot of his RBIs were coming when the 5, 6, 7 spot in the lineup, in the Pirates lineup every day, when they were on their winning ways, was the best part of the lineup, when it was Dickerson, Moran, and Cervelli.
Yeah.
Those
were the days. I don't have the... I'll look it up for Cervelli also, but I know he's, you know, leading all baseball, at least he was as of a couple of days ago, in 2-out RBIs, which are huge.
Right.
And that's whenever you...
And he usually is hitting in the 5 or 6 hole now, correct?
He's hitting second usually.
Because I know, let's see. But the beautiful thing about all of this fun stuff is that we can look it up and it'll be in our hands in no time. So let's see. And Cervelli's having one hell of a season. He's 282, yeah. 8 homers, and 34 RBIs. That's the Cervelli that the Pirates wanted when they got him.
This is better than the Cervelli.
Right.
At least offensively. He's been a pretty terrible pitch framer this year, which is part of the reason why they got him. Or right. A big reason why they got him. Because they wanted him to replace Russell Martin. Okay. Cervelli this year. 39 at-bats with a runner in scoring position. 28 RBI. That is .718
That's RBI. Double the league average.
That's double the league average. That's your RBI machine, if you want to talk about that as a stat.
But this is also a guy, okay, so just looking at appearances per game, he's appeared in, how many games has he appeared in? Let's see here. He's appeared in 43 games, okay?
All right.
He's batted sixth in 26 of those. So, and not one, the only one that, and I guess it really was a small sample size of him hitting second. He only appeared in three games there, and in seven when Marte was hurt in the three hole. But 26 games batting sixth. Let's see here. I just want to make sure my stats are lined up. He's got 19 RBIs from the sixth hole. That's one of those situations where, and you talk about the two-out opportunities that he's had. Josh Bell is probably one of those outs because of two. You think about it, he's hitting the fifth after Dickerson, most likely, or Moran. So it's one of those situations where now you're taking an opportunity for Cervelli to drive you in because he's got most likely a guy like Dickerson on base or even Polanco or Marte if they're are hitting it in front of him. As you think about it, if you get, let's say, hypothetically speaking, first inning, for example, Harrison gets on, number two hitter Meadows gets on, then Marte, and, okay, maybe, well, this is probably a bad example, but Marte doesn't get on, he gets out. He hits into a force out, so he's not on base. Josh Bell gets out, then you get load the bases. Now you have Cervelli up, bases juiced or whatever, and now you're two outs. So you have to get those runs in, or you don't get anything. So I think what Clint needs to focus on, or not maybe Clint, is taking Josh Bell, de-stressing him from the, and I'm pretty sure I just created a word here, but move him out of the four hole for the time being. I know he's the full cleanup hitter of the future, but you got to get a guy in there that's going to give you an opportunity to drive in runs and also get on base. And that's really what they're lacking right now, I think, from that four hole.
Yeah, I'm just going to give one quick thought and then we'll move on to prognostications. But Josh Bell is probably pretty thankful that Gregory Polanco and Austin Meadows are currently, you know, diverting the attention away of, you know, how do we fix the outfield rather than, hey, what the heck is going on at first base?
Right, that's the thing is,
for him.
We've had so many different...
Because if Polanco gets right there, I guarantee you there's going to be some talk that, well, why can't we move Gregory to first base and give Meadows right field? You know, just from...
Honestly?
Random.
I don't mind that. I don't know that...
You can't do it mid-season.
No. But I don't know that Polanco could play first base. I think he's got the frame to, and he's got the ability to build on it and become a muscular first baseman. But that is an intriguing opportunity, in my opinion. That would be... I know that's very, very far-fetched, and that's something that they really don't want to do. But it's just one of those deals where, it makes you think. But you think, and you're right. We talk about Polanco and his ebbs and flows and streaks and slumps in right field. And we've talked about the evolution of Austin Meadows, the outfielder of the future. And he is impressed. He's National League Rookie of the Year or Rookie of the Month for the month of May. And he was only out for 2 weeks. He is on an absolute rampage. And it's been really fun to watch. But, and then you have Joe Musgrove coming back. You have Jameson Taillon struggles. You have the bullpen struggles. Nobody's talking about Josh Bell's struggles. Why is he getting the free pass here? Is it because I think for me, obviously, this might just be a little bit of a sophomore slump, but it's one of those deals where, maybe there's more than meets the eye for Josh Bell. Now, granted, he's got his walks are up, whatever, but it's one of those deals where there needs to be a little bit more attention focused to that first base position than what they're leading on. But enough about the positions. Let's get to Ross.
Headed off the trail a little too far and gotten angry. Let's just, real fast, we're going to make this a quick one for prognostications because, I don't know, I think people are already sick and tired of us talking about everything that has gone wrong in Pirates baseball over the last couple weeks.
Because there have been a lot of things that have gone wrong.
There have been a lot of things going wrong. We just picked the ones at the top. So 3 at home against the Dodgers, mini home stand, go out to play the Cubbies for 3. Hopefully no one gets any plantar fasciitis or, can't play the position anymore, as Joe Madden would probably say.
Are the Cubs, so while we're talking about the Cubs, are the Cubs now the Pirates' biggest rival?
I think so. I mean, I don't know if you can count it a rivalry whenever one team, consistently comes in, kicks your ass, cries, and then leaves.
And I think that's the most infuriating part is that they do cry. They cry and they cry.
Yeah, come in, play dirty, they cry about it. And, oh, man, I was very disappointed to hear Pirates fans booing Anthony Rizzo whenever he came up. They're not treating their fans, not teaching their fans the right thing, which, in fairness to Joe Madden, in the history of Wrigley Field, no Cubs fan has ever booed anyone before. I guess that is a fair point.
And yeah, and especially not anybody on the Cubs team, especially when they were absolutely awful. Wait a second, they booed their own fan. Anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, let's take a time out.
It's not like they completely destroy the life of, a fan or two.
Right. Steve Bartman, sorry, bro. I like
that
guy.
I
wouldn't
want
to touch Moises to lose pissy hands anyway. But that's neither here nor there. Anyway. Let's talk Cubs since we do have them coming up, and they are. This is a hot button topic. This is the Pittsburgh hot take, I think, of the month right now. You have the slide that Elias Diaz gets his leg taken out on a stretch play, and okay, I get it. You're sliding in hard at home. Fine, not a big deal. You want to break up two. I get that, but. For me, it wasn't that play. It was what Madden said about it afterward that really irked me. Like, oh, it was a good, clean play. No, it's not a clean play. It's a baseball play. That's hard-nosed baseball. This is a guy that had Chris Coughlin take out Jung Ho Kang's leg.
Plantar fasciitis, man.
So it's one of those deals. Cool. It's that stuff like that's going to happen. They take that away, and the call got everybody tossed. It's whatever. But don't come out here and say, oh, I just didn't want to get him booed. And it was a good baseball play, and people on the other team said it was okay.
He cries, man.
Listen, man.
He cries. I don't know how the other 29 teams in the league stand him. And if he is half as big a toll to the other 29 teams as he is to the Pirates, he's the biggest one in baseball in recent memory.
And I think he said something about like the position. Oh, Diaz needs to learn how to play the position.
Ah, yes, because as we all know, Joe Madden has played as many major league innings as catcher as I have, so he clearly knows.
Right.
Yeah, I played in the minor leagues, but still.
But the thing is, what else do you want him to do? He gave Rizzo enough time to get to the plate. The play is already over at home because he caught the ball and he's out. So, boom. So he's getting ready to get the out of first base. Where do you want him to go with his feet? Like, he's got to get his feet out of the way. No. And Don't get me wrong.
His feet were out of the way.
Right. Right.
He was a good two steps in front of the plate.
And then you have, fast forward to Joe Musgrove's start. He slides in hard to second base into Baez, and Baez gets into his face. That was a clean play.
Hey, you have to anticipate that slide, buddy. If you can't, you can't play the position.
That's right. So my thing is, it doesn't go both ways. My thing, Musgrove, that was one heck of a slide, and that's exactly what they needed. I thought that the tensions were there. He slid in hard, and he hustled. And it wasn't a dirty play. He went in and made a play and stayed on the base. That's the thing. He was right there. But that warrants the benches clearing. It wasn't a brawl, but the benches did clear. So you got, and then Baez is, I don't like Baez by any means. I think he's a goofball. You can bat flip all you want on 200 foot high pop ups. But at the end of the day, they're still 200 foot pop ups and they're not getting that far out of the infield. But it's just one of those things. They bitch and moan and do this and do that. And then they're supposed to be the ones that are holier than now. And I've seen more dirty plays out of Cubs players over the last few years since Madden got there than I really ever have. But that's also because now the Cubs are relevant every year and they don't have this goat curse and the curse is finally lifted and this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, I'm just thankful that my, future children's future children won't have to be alive 106 years from now whenever they win their next World Series. But it's all going to make it more infuriating whenever the Cubbies sweep this series because there is absolutely no way that it's going to go well.
No.
And it just has sweep written all over it. I'll go out on a limb as the optimist and say they take two out of three against the Dodgers because they aren't exactly in a great spot. But I'm going 2-4 for the week then.
I'm going to go 3-3. I think they take game number one against LA, and I think they win two out of the next five games in hopes that I do hope they sweep the Cubs. They've got 3-day games, which is they got 4-day games in a row, which is really weird. And then they go to Arizona next week, and they're all West Coast games. We get late night Buck Nation. Are you, you're not making the trip out there, Alex?
I am not. I am not.
Disappointed. I thought for sure you'd be in Arizona in the dry heat, but
it's a dry heat.
So you've got 2-4 and I've got 3-3. Is that accurate?
Yes.
All right. So we have not had any accurate, prognostications in quite some time. Maybe we knocked the sweep off. We knocked the rust off. But the good news for me is the Altoona Curve are coming home. They've been on quite a road swing. So I'll be able to get out to a couple games there this week, hopefully, if time allows. But on that front, little segue into minor league baseball, they have two guys that made pretty significant impacts in their seasons last year. Montana Drapow and Mitchell Tolman coming back from suspensions. They were suspended 50 games. Tolman is now in Bradenton. I believe he had a hit today in his first game back from his suspension. And Montana, who's the all-time saves leader for the Curve, notched a save the Curve's last win over the weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how they handled their return to live game action after being sidelined due to, I believe, drug policy violations. So it'll be interesting to see how they work their way back up to where they were last year. Drapow's end of the season in AAA, while Tolman was a big part of the offense as the Curve clinched the Eastern League Championship or clinched the playoff berth and went into the playoffs and then also won the championship. So it'll be interesting to see how they adjust and get back to where they were last year and how long it takes them to do so. But I believe that's all we have for today. Unless you have any parting thoughts.
Everything hurts. And I'm dying.
I'm so sore, man.
It's a very cheerful episode of Clear the Deck.
It's more like Clear the Lactic Acid. I'm sore because I played in a game on Thursday. No, it was Friday. I don't even know what day it is. And I played first base, a little bit better than Josh Bell. I had a double and two RBIs, so yay me.
How many at bats? What's your RBI four, to at bat ratio here?
Four ABs. I walked in another, and I had two pop ups.
All right. You're putting it in the air. That's what I'm proud of you for.
Yeah, exactly. That launch angle was almost there. I was a little tired. It was more so defensive reasons. But the beauty of it is I'm 1-for-3, that 333 average right now into the season with two RBIs and scoring a run. We got the W, and I've been sore ever since because I'm old, out of shape, and not a professional athlete. But such is life. Alex, I hope you do begin to feel better. I hope the Pirates offense and Pirates bullpen have not been making you ill, like they have for some people. And I hope that you don't get infected with any trash or smells that came from the North Shore this weekend. It was Kenny weekend. And there were 25 tons of garbage picked up, from North Shore parking lots, on Saturday into Sunday, which, sounds like just a regular day in Philadelphia, but such is life. Anyway, for Alex Stumpf, this has been Jared Prugar. Thank you for listening to Clear the Deck on Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. Have a wonderful Monday.